This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Professor Thomas Albrecht from the University of Illinois School of Arts and Design. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. We're talking about a recent project he did, a performance art project called Call and Response that used three different representatives of three different religious traditions in this art project. Tell us about it. How did you get this idea? Where did it come from?
Well, this is a project that has sort of been simmering in my mind for a few years now, actually. It came about as a response of sort of considering the language that was used after the events of 9/11. Oftentimes you would hear members of, the government and people beyond government positions talking about this being a wake-up call. Many people, even within Champaign-Urbana community, participated in events that sort of took a look at that language and came together in terms of the religious communities to come together around a table and discuss issues of belief and issues of commonality, where they found agreement, really trying to reach a certain standard of mutual understanding, I think, regarding sort of the events of 9/11 as a starting point.
Now, there's a long tradition in art of dealing with religious issues. We think, of course, of paintings that might have a religious content or religious stories, narratives represented in paint on canvas. But your project is a performance piece. Tell us what that is.
Correct. Well, I think that I'm trained as a painter. And so for me, this was a bit of a leap. Hmm. I had to figure out a brand new medium, so to speak, using a new technology. I'm most familiar with using technology that is oftentimes considered quite dumb, pencil and paper. And I really had to go up a rather steep learning curve because this was really the way in which to deal with the subject matter, deal with it effectively, bringing in issues of newer forms of technology, video, audio, and being able to capture that through live performance aspects.
So tell us what you actually did.
Well, the first part really was talking to people about this particular idea. It really started several months ago speaking with colleagues of mine, playing off of ideas about what would work, what sounded right, and what perhaps could be tweaked a bit. And then it was really a matter of going out to members of in the religious communities in Champaign-Urbana and pitching the idea, talking to them about what I was up to. And that was probably the most challenging aspect of it, trying to figure out a new language in which to talk about this art project.
Because you were trained as an artist.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And in fact, as a painter, as you say.
Right.
I want to get into your background later, but let's give our listeners just sort of a little hint of what this was like. It happened on September 11th, which was two Sundays ago.
Correct.
At Krannert Center for the Performing Arts.
Correct.
Not at Krannert Art Museum.
No.
Okay, so you chose a performance location, but it was outside.
Correct.
Tell us what happened.
It was on the perimeter. It took place early in the morning. All the participants gathered quite early at 7 a.m., took their places, so to speak. And the very first call that took place started at approximately 7:45 in the morning. And each one of the participants, there were three children, one each from the Christian, Jewish, and Muslim traditions. They processed around to each side of the Krannert Center. And at each point, starting at the south side, moving to the east, moving to the north, and then concluding on the west side, each one of those participants did a form of call that was particular to their religious tradition.
So you call this Call and Response, a performance art project, and you say it's kind of a reflection on the events of 9/11.
Correct.
Back in 01.
Correct. Okay. Well, my tradition, in terms of my upbringing, I was raised the son of a Lutheran minister. Huh. And so my familiarity with issues of theology and religion were always tied into trying to think about how those belief systems get imaged, how they get played out. And I was really, from the time I was very young, very much an observer. I would sit up in front in the church and watch people process forwards and backwards. And I really was intent on looking at what happened, but really in which the ways in which people sort of played out their faith in actions, in physical movements.
Now, how did you pick the time for this performance? Why early in the morning?
Well, the calls really were meant to sort of coincide with the times in which the planes went down on 9/11/01. And so each one of the calls went out at exactly the moment in which each one of those planes went down.
Now, this was a live performance, but part of it was also a video recording of it and an audio recording of it. But you used equipment which was would hear it, but would also give a sense of that it's outside, that it's sort of, I'm not sure, informal?
Correct. Yeah, the audio recordings were actually, you pick up on a lot.
Okay.
You pick up on static.
All right.
You pick up on wind.
Huh.
You pick up on the chirping of birds and the ringing of cell phones in one of the clips we have today. You pick up on a great deal. And I think what's nice about that is you get a sense of what others were hearing when those calls went out that morning.
Now, you've brought us a recording, of a sound recording of each of these calls. Let's listen to the first one, which was a call by whom?
This was called out by Natalia Ginsburg.
From Hillel?
Correct.
The Jewish Students Foundation?
Correct.
And this will last just a little over a minute, and you say there is some static behind it, so people should be prepared for that on their radios.
They might want to turn it down a bit.
Okay, here we go. So we've heard the first call, which was the call in Hebrew from the Jewish tradition. Tell us about that.
Well, one thing we missed at the end of the track there, I should have alerted you to this, was the blowing of the shofar, which is really quite nice. We can hear it, though, in another track.
Who did that?
She did as well.
Oh, she
so
did. And who is Natalia Ginsburg? How old is she?
Well, Natalia, I believe, is 10 years old.
10 years old.
Yes.
But
yes.
She blew the ram's horn,
she did.
The shofar.
She did, which was really sort of the symbolism of the shofar was really brought to my attention by Rabbi David Techtel of Chabad,
yes.
Jewish Center. Mm-hmm. And he brought up the fact that the individual who blows the shofar takes on really the level of a child.
Hmm.
In the blowing of the shofar, the person who blows it performs that, whether they're 80 years old or a child, takes on the personage of a child.
Hmm.
Really quite nice symbolism for the event.
Now, why did you choose three children to do these calls rather than adults?
Well, I think that in choosing children, there's always a tension in terms of what is given to children, what children provide in terms of both hope, but also in terms of the tension involved with they may carry forward certain forms of prejudices that are given to them or what they take on. Mm. So there is that tension involved with children in terms of what they are provided and what they're given, what they carry forward in terms of what they are brought to by parents and communities.
Now, after the Jewish call, who was next?
Up next was we moved to the east side of the Krannert. And up next was Abdulrahman Mansara, and he called out the Muslim call, and he's 12 years old.
And he was from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center.
That's
here
correct.
In Champaign-Urbana.
Correct.
All right. And so tell us, this is a little longer. This lasts almost 3 minutes.
Correct.
What will we be hearing?
You'll be hearing a call to prayer. He oftentimes does this call to prayer during Friday prayer services. I've witnessed this several times, and that's how I sort of came to know about him. Really an extraordinary voice and really sort of a profound statement in what he calls out.
But again, we'll prepare our listeners. This is taken outside. You'll hear cars honking and static and other things. But let's listen to this Muslim call from 9/11. So we've heard the plaintive sounds of a call to prayer in Arabic from a 12-year-old Muslim young boy from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, part of a performance art project put together by our guest today from the Art and Design faculty of the University of Illinois, Thomas Albrecht. Thomas, tell us, why did you choose a call to prayer?
Well, really the whole idea of the project focuses on the idea of call and sort of the partner to that, the idea of response. The call to prayer to me is fundamental from my understanding of the Muslim tradition, Islamic tradition, which really focuses on the idea of submission to God. What is called out, what is responded to, is sort of a common idea in the three sort of major monotheistic religions. The idea of calling, the idea of covenant, those ideas are, I would say, foundational elements to all three belief systems that are shared ideas among the three.
The last one we're going to hear is the Christian call. And let me tell listeners that, yes, I do remember this is a live call-in program, and we will be giving out phone numbers soon, but I wanted to get all three of these calls out to our listeners before I invite folks to make comments or questions for our guest. Tell us about the Christian call.
This one is called out by John Lynn Miller, who's 9 years old, and she attends Grace Lutheran Church in Champaign.
And what will we be hearing?
This is really part of the Lutheran tradition, but it sort of carries through to sort of the higher liturgical traditions in the Christian church. This is a canticle that is called out, and basically it finds its way into liturgies within the Christian tradition throughout the year, particularly during times where they're observing sort of times of remembrance and penitence and things like that.
And so again, a reflection on a recollection of the events of 9/11/01, this time a Christian call given out outside of Krannert Center for the Performing Arts by John Lynn Miller, age 9, from Grace Lutheran Church. I was thinking as we heard these three examples from the Jewish, Muslim, and Christian tradition, how what's familiar to me, I have a certain emotional reaction to, and I have a very different emotional reaction to things which are different.
Mm-hmm.
Was that part of your idea?
I think so. You know, there's in discussing these, what would be called out, what would be arranged, what each child would be doing in talking with individuals from the various faith communities. There was discussion about should these be called out in English?
Mm-hmm.
Should these, what in fact was being looked for in terms of the calls themselves? And in discussing a number of these ideas, I felt that it was significant that whatever was called out, whatever was put forth by each one of the traditions, that it be authentic, that it be lived out on a regular basis as part of the faith community's sort of experience, and that it not be sort of, as I put it in my own words, watered down by trying to make it so accessible.
Mm-hmm.
That idea of difference, I think is very much a part of the project. The young people never stand right next to one another. They are within the same sort of sightedness on the perimeter of the Krannert. But the idea of difference, about standing apart, is part of the piece, and I think that is important.
Let me give the phone numbers for our listeners who'd like to ask a question to our guest, a professor of art and design, Thomas Albrecht, who's with us today, talking about his performance art project that was performed at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts 2 weeks ago on Sunday, September 11th. The phone number for people who are outside of Champaign-Urbana is a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. So that's a free call, 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, you can reach us on several local lines by punching in 333-9455. So 333-WILL if you're in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. While we're waiting for phone callers with comments or questions, let me just reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Thomas Albrecht, who came up with this idea for a reflection on the events of 9/11. And it was recorded on audio, but also video. Now, what and people could also hear it live online, is that correct?
Correct. The signal was carried by Will TV. We worked in good partnership with them to set this up. There was a lot of troubleshooting in terms of actually how to carry the signal to live to a website that was established beforehand. And people could actually watch it live and hear it live on the website. The live stream was sent there.
We do have a caller waiting on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. I was curious. I hadn't heard about this, and, where was this advertised? Because I would have really liked to have gone to this. And then my next question is, will you be doing this again in the future?
Well, beforehand, there was some brief publicity about it. It was advertised about a week before in the entertainment section of the local newspaper. And then it was publicized in the religion section in upcoming events. And then sort of through word-of-mouth circles in the various faith communities, word sort of spread as well.
So were there people there as a live audience?
There was a live audience there. It was small, but they were enthusiastic.
It was early in the morning,
It was hard to get people there early in the morning. But there was a live audience, and I see this as a potential sort of an example. I am looking to work with 9/11 families in New York and Washington, D.C., to see if they are willing to work with me on a potential event for next year.
Since our caller is still on the line, is there a way that she could see or hear this on a website now?
Yes.
Especially since I have a toddler who would be able to be there early in the morning.
Okay. well, you can continue to sort of access archived footage of the event, and I'll give you the web address. That's www.awakeupcall.org. And a wake-up call has no breaks in it. And archived footage of that will continue to be put up on the site in the coming weeks.
Well, great. I look forward to it. It seems like a very interesting project, and I do hope you're able to repeat it even here in Champaign-Urbana. So thank you.
Thanks very much.
And later on Keeping the Faith, here in our second half, we'll be listening to two more audio recordings from this. So there'll be a bit more coming on this program as well. Let me reintroduce our guest, and I want to thank that caller for those questions. Thomas Albrecht, you've been at the university how long now?
I'm going into my fourth year.
Fourth year. You're an assistant professor, so you're looking for tenure. Now, how will your tenure committee evaluate this kind of a performance piece? Because it's so different from, what you were hired to do, painting and all of that.
I will attempt to be careful in how I answer this. There have always been sort of questions regarding my interest in taking a look at belief systems and how that sort of manifests itself in the work that I do. My sort of belief about that, however, is that's where my work sort of finds itself right now.
Hmm.
The drawings that I have been producing for a long period of time now come out of a process of making which really focuses on simplicity of a gestural mark, which focuses on really sort of meditations on the process and the time based quality in which a mark is laid down on a surface. And so issues of time, issues of mark, issues of gesture, the physicality of all of those things sort of play out in work that I have done prior to this. And I think that they are sort of a logical extension of the work that I'm currently interested in doing right now.
Now, this performance piece came at the time when there was a faculty art show at Granite Art Museum. Do you have other pieces there, or is this sort of your contribution to that whole scene?
Well, I do have an additional piece currently in the faculty exhibition there that really takes a look on the sort of the abstraction of a numbers-based system of counting deaths in the Iraq war right now. It shows the difference between how the body count takes place for U.S. soldiers and military, and then sort of the ambiguous nature of a body count of Iraqi civilians. And that's contrasted with a marking-based system on two separate walls in the gallery space.
And as I recall, the present administration made a very conscious decision to change the way they accounted for enemy deaths from previous wars, where in the past it was sort of scorekeeping. Look, we killed so many, but we only lost this many. But this administration, as I recall, purposefully chose not to say how many Iraqis were killed.
Correct.
But you've found ways to figure that out.
Well, I think the numbers system is very difficult in this particular case. I'm relying on information that sort of goes as high as over 100,000, as low as 12,000, which was reported by the Iraq Interior Ministry, and I'm coming out on sort of a conservative side, somewhere in the range right now. We're tracking at about 26,000.
Now, Cranard Art Museum is not open on Mondays, but listeners who would like to see your piece there on the Iraq War numbering systems could go on Tuesdays?
Correct. Tuesday through Sunday, and the hours are well posted on their website, but also on the door.
Okay. And how do they find the Faculty Art Museum or the Faculty Art Exhibit once they get to Cranard?
Well, obviously, anytime you can go in, there's guards standing right there, and they can direct you to it. But if you go in the main entrance to the museum and go to your left, it's pretty much straight in front of you.
And your piece?
My piece is sort of toward the back of the overall. It's a rather large space that it's in. It's toward the back to the left-hand side.
And how can it first be recognized?
Well, it's two white walls with pencil markings on it.
Okay.
That's sort of the best way to describe it visually at the moment.
Okay. And I know it's very inappropriate to ask for a word description of a painting, of a work of a visual art, but at least we've told people where they can see it.
Correct.
Thanks.
Correct.
Well, let's get back to your piece in just a minute, and let me just tell listeners again. We're hearing excerpts, audio excerpts, from a reflection on the events of 9/11/01, a recollection, really, of that event that if you didn't hear it earlier, include three children from the Jewish tradition, the Muslim tradition, and the Christian tradition. And in just a few moments, we'll hear two more excerpts from that, and we'll have more conversation with our guest today, Thomas Albrecht. I see we have a caller patiently waiting on line 4. Let's bring that caller into the conversation. You're on the air. Yes, line 4, are you there? Line 4, are you there?
Line 4?
Yes, come right ahead.
The audios which we've heard, the Jewish and the Muslim were quite strong, but the Christian seemed to be a little off mic. And probably would have been strong if we would have been able to hear it a little more clearly, but I'm wondering if you'd like to hear another Christian call. It would take about 30 seconds.
I think we could risk that.
Deus Kyrios, que pepan enimin, evlogimenos o ercomenos, en olomati Kyriou. God is Lord and has revealed himself to us. Blessed is he who cometh in the name of the Lord.
Now tell us what language the first part of that was in.
That's in the liturgical Greek. It's a Byzantine chant.
Are you an Orthodox Christian by chance?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I am.
Well, thank you for representing that tradition on the air.
Then I have a question.
Yes, sir.
We've heard the call portion. I wonder, perhaps it's coming up soon, what does the response portion consist of?
Very good question. Well,
thank
you for the question. We'll let our guest respond.
The response is the response aspect is the sort of the responsibility of all of us. The call goes out, and whether you believe or not, I'm not sure that you have to be a practitioner of a particular religious system of belief to respond. I think that the tension involved with whatever is called out in terms of a public setting, it is always sort of mitigated by how that is responded to, whether that is a kind of non-response or a response that's not necessarily anticipated or intended. That the tension involved in those two things is really sort of where the project plays out.
Thank the caller for those questions and for adding one more call to our program. You never can tell what will happen on live radio.
It's great. Thank you.
Let me take just a moment. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs every Sunday from 5 to 6 live on WILL AM 580. Next week, our guest will be Evan Mellenbacher from the Christian Science tradition. The week following, October 9, Karen Bush, who is the current president of the National Campus Ministry Association, will be our guest. October 16, Jennifer Bishop Jenkins will be speaking with us about murder victim families who are against the death penalty, even for those who have committed murder against people in their families. On October 23rd, our guest will be Jim Quigley, talking about energy conservation. And the last Sunday in October, our guest will be Reverend Sarah Rott, representing a peacemaking mission. So those are some of the guests coming up from various religious and spiritual traditions here on Keeping the Faith. Keeping the Faith programs are supported in part by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, where I am the executive director. The Y is the oldest student organization at the university. It was started back in 1873, and since that time has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. And I might just mention that we have in our studio today as a silent studio audience one person who's a guest from the Virginia Tech Campus Y that was also started back 132 years ago, too. So one of our sister organizations. And we're happy to have a guest from there visiting us this week. Coming up at the University Y here in Urbana-Champaign this week on our Know Your University series of programs on Tuesday noon, United Students Against Sweatshops, the U of I chapter. Students from that Y program will be talking about Out of the Heat, No More Sweaty Clothes. So we'll have a panel of students talking about some of the issues that they're very concerned about in terms of clothing, particularly those produced by the university, and how to recognize clothes that are produced in places that are not sweatshops around the world. That's Tuesday noon, a free lecture. If you'd like to order food from our wonderful Thai cafeteria, you may give us a call in advance so we know how many lunches to have ready. It's inexpensive but very good food. Just call the Y at 337-1500 if you'd like to have a lunch when you come. Friday at the Y, this week, September 30, Sam Hamill is our guest. Sam is a poet and director of the organization Poets Against War. And he'll be talking on the whole issue of poetry and social engagement. Sam Hamill, that's this Friday at Friday Forum at the University Y, 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. Very easy to get to anywhere in the community by bus. It's true, parking's a bit of a problem, but at noon, often people are finishing their 11 o'clock classes and taking off, and you can even find parking if you come by car. So that's Friday, September 30, at noon, University Y. Sam Hamill will be our guest. A program coming up on WILL this week on the Afternoon Magazine, tomorrow on Monday the 26th. Tom Rogers will be the host sitting in for Celeste Quinn just after 1 o'clock, and he'll be talking on the whole issue of faith at war, a journey on the front lines of Islam from Baghdad to Timbuktu. He'll be speaking, Tom will be speaking with a Wall Street Journal correspondent from the Middle East, Yaroslav Trofimov. That's Monday at 1 o'clock here on AM 580, just after 1 o'clock on the Afternoon Magazine. I mentioned that the University YMCA is the oldest student organization on campus. It's also the oldest charity. And by charity, that means that we survive by because of the kindness of people who make donations. If you'd like to make a donation so that the University Y can continue its work into its 133rd year next year, simply give us a call, 337-1500, or look at our website, universityymca.org. You may call me, Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500. We also accept donations of vehicles, cars, trucks, motorcycles, vans, boats, and you can deduct our whatever we sell those vehicles for from your taxes as a charitable contribution, and know that those vehicles will be sold at a reasonable price, but we'll make some money for the Y, and we'll also help perhaps a student who would find a used vehicle very, very helpful. So if you're interested in that, also give me a call during the week. Well, let's get back to our guest. We're talking about Call and Response, a performance art project by Thomas Albrecht from the University Faculty of Arts and Design. Tell us what we're going to hear next, Thomas.
Well, all three participants, all three children, ended up on the west side, sort of the main entrance to the Crown Arts Center. And shortly after 9 a.m. our time, to mark the downing of the plane in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, all three of them joined together at the same time to do their various forms of call. And so all three of them in this particular audio clip will be calling out together.
Now, this is about a three-minute segment, and I haven't heard it yet, but is there a bit of cacophony with all three going on at the same time?
Well, there is, and what people will also probably be able to hear is the clanking of the flags at half-mast on that particular day, as well as quite a bit of wind, particularly at the end, which adds a definite sort of audible cacophony going on there.
And it would be appropriate particularly this week as we're remembering two hurricanes. So let's now hear this clip that's the all call from 2 weeks ago on 9/11.
Thank you.
So we heard three different calls from the Jewish, Muslim, and Christian tradition, three children at once calling those out. I know your field is art, visual arts, and not music, but it reminded me of the Charles Ives piece where he has two bands coming playing different pieces at the same time from different directions in a square in old New England. Why did you want to have all three of these together?
Well, just to clarify, that particular track was actually a sound recording from the quad, and so some of the echoing and the reverberation of the mics inconsistent quality of the sound recording. I think you maybe have even heard some cell phones ringing in there. That was taken from a remote site on the quad.
Quite a distance from where these three were actually.
Correct. We had individuals with laptop computers and portable speaker systems set up in various locations throughout Champaign-Urbana, and they were amplifying this sound from the website directly.
So how many different locations was this sort of broadcast?
From three different locations in the area, correct.
Okay.
Matching up with the number of children.
Okay. We're talking with Thomas Albrecht. If you'd like to ask him a question, 333-9455 is the number which can reach us in the studio from Champaign-Urbana. If you're farther away, including on the Internet, if you're listening to this program live on your computer at WILL.UIUC.edu. Anywhere in the continental U.S., you may call us 1-800-222-9455. So that's a toll-free call, 1-800-222-WILL. Thomas, you dealt with people from these various religious traditions, and were they suspicious? I mean, here you are, an art teacher, an art lecturer, professor. What did they think about letting their children come under your guidance for this event?
Well, you know, as a parent myself, I would have been suspicious, particularly of an artist coming in and proposing this particular idea. I think that there's a bit of distrust on the part of artists, but also from those in various religious traditions. Between artists and people in religious communities, sometimes there is a bit of suspicion. I think the hardest work bringing this together was developing trust within the various communities that what I was intending on doing really recognized with a certain amount of sincerity the integrity of a belief system, what that meant not only for an individual but also for the community. And any time sort of the community puts forth an individual to sort of represent it in a particular way, that is cause for a certain amount of really valid questions and making sure that what is called out, while not representing everybody's views, certainly will be an authentic representation of that community's way of enacting belief.
And how did you make the initial contacts?
There were individuals that I knew already within the community from projects that I've done in the past, and I just began sort of calling up people and working through some of these sort of key individuals that I knew of, sort of found my entryway there.
For our listeners that may, for whom this may be their first introduction to a performance art piece, mm-hmm. What is such a thing?
Well, that's a little bit more complicated question. I'll try to break it down in the most simple way I can. I think that in terms of contemporary art, there's been a tradition of utilizing the body as opposed to an object to make a piece of work to make a statement or to posit a thesis or an idea. And I think it borrows greatly from traditions of the theater ideas that are taken up in film where you have moving images. And the idea of a sort of a performance-based project really takes and borrows from each one of those, you know, traditions. This particular one, I think, throws in ideas about theology, anthropology, what it means for communities to not only come together, to express certain sort of structures of belief, but also what do they call out themselves to the larger community in which they find themselves.
What has been the response that you've heard to this piece?
Well, you seldom hear negative response in something like this. The response that I have received from those who participated, from those who sort of witnessed the event live, to those individuals who witnessed it on the website, has all been extremely positive, which is, you know, wonderful to hear. But what I'm really looking for going forward in terms of the discussion is really for people to take a critical look at what the project really presents. I think it presents not just sort of a simple performance, which I think was handled wonderfully by the three children, but I think it really deals with questions of interpretation, ultimately. What does it mean to take a religious text, decipher it not only on an individual way, but within a community? And then what does the community do with that? How does the community speak about what it believes in?
Now, you're using the term community in a wider sense than people within each of these three traditions would. For example, at CIMIC, at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, they would see themselves as part of an Islamic community that mm-hmm. is, yet quite diverse within itself, with people from many different countries and Sunnis and Shiites and everything else, but in conservatives and more progressive Muslim. But you're using the sense in the whole wider community that would include the university and people who are very secular and people who are very skeptical of anything religious and people who may be Buddhists and Hindus and whatever. One of my responses in terms of interpretation, just really off the cuff, I'll put it in the form of a question. Can people coming from those many different perspectives get anything in common, or are they each reading something differently from it? I'm thinking of a good friend who's an atheist and who would hear this and say, "Well, all three of those traditions are bankrupt."
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Well, that would be a very different response than someone who might be religious, for
right,
example.
Right. Well, I think that's reflective of the world we live in.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, one of the advantages I think that we do have, and this certainly could be argued by many people and probably would be, but one of the great advantages that we have living in the United States is that we do have quite a diverse tradition of religious belief. And what that allows people to do is accept or reject. But ultimately, we do have to come to terms with the belief systems of others. Whether we sort of respect those, tolerate those is a word that's oftentimes used. I'm not fond of that one myself. But ultimately, the charge that all of us certainly have a responsibility for is how do we respond to what others present us in terms of their beliefs. I think that's vitally important in terms of the political climate we currently find ourselves in, but also in terms of for many of us who sort of hold to the ideals of a democratic state. Finding a certain amount of common ground where we can actually listen to one another and still hold to what we believe in strongly.
Where do you come from? You mentioned your father was a Lutheran pastor.
He still currently is a practicing Lutheran minister in New England.
So you moved around a lot, probably.
I did.
As the son of a Christian pastor.
I did.
Protestant pastor.
Yes. But I was born in Massachusetts and moved to Minnesota, where my mother and father sort of met and a lot more
Lutherans there.
Many more Lutherans than in New England. And then my parents got homesick for Cape Cod in Massachusetts, and we moved back east. And that's where I did my undergraduate schooling.
Where?
At Rhode Island School of Design. Uh-huh. And then I took a break from formal art education and studied theology at Yale Divinity School, where there was a program titled the Institute for Sacred Music that brought together musicians and visual artists and people studying theater.
And did you see yourself at that point when you were at Yale more as a musician or as a visual artist?
Well, I went there specifically as a visual artist. I was sort of the token visual artist there at the time. I was a good sort of spokesperson for that. But all along, I knew that my time at Yale was really spent to refocus my work when I went back to art school.
So, did you finish a master's there?
I did.
You did, and then where did you go?
I went to the University of Washington in Seattle to get my MFA in painting.
So you've been on both coasts.
Both coasts and in the Midwest.
We have a caller on line one with a question or comment. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. As a listener, I would have liked to find out what was the meaning of the words that they use, because I'm familiar with Islam. But I don't know what was the meaning of the other two calls, the words that they used.
Very good.
That's a good question. There have been several requests, and the intention all along was, as the website is being worked on, that we will provide for you a breakdown of the language that was used, both in its original form and then in its translation into English.
And I want to, did you want to have a follow-up caller?
Mm, okay. No, then I can go to the website and see it, huh?
You should be able to see that within probably the next 2 weeks. We're hoping to get that up.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That was very interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the caller knew the Arabic as a Muslim for the Muslim call to prayer and asked about the Christian and the Jewish. The Christian call was in English, and as you described it earlier as what kind of a liturgical piece in the Lutheran liturgy?
Well, the proper title for it is a canticle.
A song.
Mm-hmm. And basically a form of prayer put to music.
And in that case, it was a prayer for mercy, a prayer for peace.
Correct.
And it identified particularly Jesus.
Correct.
Which Muslim listeners would see as one of the prophets.
Correct. Uh-huh. Correct.
Okay. And the Jewish call, for those who may not have access to the website or who may forget, do you know what its main – it was in Hebrew, but
yes.
Do you know what its main meaning was?
Once again, that form of prayer put to music was once again a call for mercy, essence. Yes, okay. A call for forgiveness, a call for mercy.
Okay. Now, why did you choose those kind of a calls? Because I take it you asked these people for something mm-hmm. authentic and
legit,
something used regularly in their tradition, but they could have been all songs of praise or something else.
Right. Well, you had asked early if I saw anything where there might be points of common ground for these three children. And for me, I think that what we were looking for was not only looking at children and what they might be able to call out, but what they might represent in terms of the three faiths. And the idea that post 9/11, where people might be able to find common ground is in their position in response to people's perceived notions about the call from God. When people take up that idea within various faith traditions, the idea of one's personal responsibility of responding to that call perceived in Scripture. I think that that's sort of what was at the heart of that.
We were not able, because of lack of time, to hear the fifth call example that you brought, but that is available on the website. And let me give the address, or I'll have you give that address for us again, if you would.
Sure. That's www.awakeupcall.org.
So those with access to computers can go to awakeupcall.org to hear these again and also to see translations. I want to thank our callers today with comments and questions, and of course our guest, Thomas Albrecht from the School of Art and Design at the University of Illinois, for talking with us about Call and Response, a performance art project, a reflection on the events of 9/11. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. I want to thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith and remind you that next week our guest will be representing the Christian Science Tradition, Evan Mellenbacher. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Forget the Deerstalker cap and the calabash pipe. The real Sherlock Holmes is much hipper than that.
Think of Holmes as the first rock star in a weird way, because, I mean, he did play the violin and write his own songs, and he did cocaine, and he went around in costumes, and, you know.
I'm Jim Fleming. Join me next time as To the Best of Our Knowledge investigates the elementary Sherlock Holmes. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana.
WILL programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, showers and isolated thunderstorms with areas of fog after midnight. Some thunderstorms may produce heavy rainfall. The low in the mid-60s with northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the morning, then partly sunny in the afternoon. The high in the upper 70s with north winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing. Lows are